Hey everybody, let me remind you one more time about my new blueprint for success. It's a project I've spent months and months working on just to help you jumpstart your comedy career and beat the competition. Whether you want to do stand-up, sketch, improv, acting, writing, producing, directing, radio, social media influencing, or even if you want a career behind the scenes as a manager or agent, Blueprint for Success will give you all the tools you need to take your career to the highest levels. With exclusive interviews, my top 50 commercial-free episodes from industry standard, one-on-one coaching with me, and unprecedented access into my knowledge and experience from over 40 years in this crazy business, I guarantee you that with Blueprint for Success, you'll become the creator you've always dreamed of becoming. No one's asking me to do this. I want to do it because I want to help you become truly undeniable. So just go to barrykatz.com, click on Blueprint for Success, and start your incredible journey today. I truly can't wait to work with you to help you change the trajectory of your comedy career forever.
And I was bitten by the bug and I was like, I need to study this because I want to do more of this. So I think if you apply yourself to it and the opportunities come there, I mean, you know the old saying, luck is when opportunity meets preparation. We have no control over the opportunity to a certain extent, but we have all control over the preparation.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Industry Standard with me, Barry Katz. We are here in New York City. Exciting times, great comics, amazing stuff. Oh, this is so great here. And I'm so excited about this episode with Adam Ferrara. You're going to have such a great time. This guy will show you the way through his words, his wisdom. He makes you laugh. He makes you cry. And he inspires you. If you need to reach me, you can do so at Instagram or X or at barrykatz.com. And without further ado, let's introduce Adam Ferrara. Adam Ferrara is an actor and comedian who Entertainment Weekly dubbed hilarious and co-hosted the BBC sensation Top Gear US for 6 seasons. Adam also starred as Chief Needles Nelson on the Emmy-nominated FX drama Rescue Me with Dennis Leary. Additionally, co-starred with the Emmy Award winner Edie Falco on Showtime's hit series Nurse Jackie, one of my favorite shows of all time. He also starred alongside Kevin James in the hit movie Paul Blart Mall Cop. Other appearances are with Emma Roberts and Hayden Christensen in the movie Little Italy, and he starred with Ryan Reynolds in the movie Definitely Maybe. Most recently, Adam guest starred on the CBS series FBI, and some of his other credits include Showtime's Why Women Kill, Paramount's NCIS, The Good Fight, Criminal Minds, Kevin Can Wait, The King of Queens, NBC's Law & Order, ABC's Ugly Betty, and the upcoming movie Nonas with Vince Vaughn and many, many more. As a stand-up comedian, Adam has been nominated twice for an American Comedy Award for Stand-Up of the Year. He's done every late show known to man and has 5 comedy specials playing now simultaneously. He has worked and performed at Carnegie Hall, Radio City Music Hall, and has performed for United States Senators and President Clinton. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my friend, somebody who's one of the most wonderful people I've ever known in the business, and I can honestly say I love him and feel strongly for him and feel so much happiness when I'm around him. Truly one of the nicest, most special, generous people I know. It's an honor. Adam Ferrara.
Here we go in 3, 2.
This show will have laughter.
I got everybody pregnant with Barry Katz and semen.
I'm not comfortable with the tone this is taking.
If you're undeniable, you will not be denied.
If you want to be successful in show business, you get yourself a Jew white manager like Barry Katz.
Being a manager is just turning no's into yeses.
Creating holy shit moments.
Undeniable.
You f***ing firing me up, Katz.
I love this man.
Is there anything else I should know?
You're on.
What?
Now
I'm on the air!
Barry Katz.
Back in the house.
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 Let's do this.
Tell me something that you've done in your career that you thought should move the needle, would move the needle, but didn't move the needle. And tell me something you did that you just threw out there and it was like insane. And you're like, what is going on? I had no idea that that would do something
special. I think the thing that I, Top Gear was a great show to do. And I did that over the summer, and that was supposed to be a summer show.
You did that for 6 years, didn't you?
Wound up doing it for six and a half years. So that was just, and that was so much fun, Barry. So much fun. I went all around the world with guys that we still love to this day. I mean, the Tanner Faust, Rutledge Wood, myself, and the crew and everybody. We were a traveling family, and we went all around the world. They flew me to Germany. They gave me the new Lamborghini Huracan. They put me on the Autobahn in the left lane. They said, go. So I got to do all this stuff. I drove up a volcano in Iceland in a non-turbo diesel Chevy pickup. That took a while.
So did that change your life in this country and other countries?
Yeah.
Were you touring in Germany and Italy and Australia?
Yeah, I got a big international following online because of that show, because the mothership of that show has been all over the world for years, and it's huge. And they were the Top Gear UK and BBC were the ones that did this, were the producers of this show. So we benefited from that same fan base. So that blew everything up. I was dubbed in Portuguese. People were sending me, you know, my voice coming out in different countries. So that really, really changed a lot of things. And I got to drive cars that cost more than the house I grew up in. You know, I got to whatever car I dreamed about when I was a kid, the Grand National, the Buick Grand National. I said, can I have one of those? They went, yeah. And bring that up. I was at the Peninsula Hotel. We were doing the Rescue Me comedy tour, and I was doing both shows at the same time. And we had to play. I was in a production meeting, and I said, "You know what I want to do? I want to play Tank Battle in Cars." And our executive producer went, "Brilliant!" And that's when I realized there's no adult in the room, and we have a budget. So I drew up this Chevy El Camino with a gun in the bed, at a turret in the bed, and I drew it up. I had to go down to. I hadn't have a scanner. I had to go down to the front desk and I had to have him scan it so I could email it. And the guy's looking at me. He's looking at me like this. It's not a weapon. I'm not a terrorist. I'm doing this for a TV show. So I sent it to him and they built the thing. They built the thing I drew.
And it's amazing. So, and then tell me something that you did that you thought you're putting it out there. This is going to make it happen. And
I think a lot of that. I'll say when I got to do, I don't know if I thought it would change anything, but it was different. I never really do anything where I think this is good, my ticket, you know. But I do stuff where I've arrived at a different level. I've been fortunate enough to have people give me the opportunity to do drama, you know. So I got to do that, which is a different muscle, and I thought I would get more dramatic roles from that, and I did. You know, I got more hour television, more of that stuff. But I didn't get the. I thought I would get more out of the drama, but I was more satisfied that I could do it. And the guy that Dennis Leary just wrote a monologue for me a couple of times, and pitched me the ball, and he believed in me, and I was a mess. I was just going over and over and over it, and I wanted to do well, and I hit it, and he gave me that opportunity. And I'll always be grateful because he said, "Oh, I knew you could do it." I said, "Well, I didn't." So
one of the guys I started with, he had the Thursday show and played against Sam.
Yeah.
One of the bits that sticks with me to this day, maybe it's because you get older or whatever you think.
Mm-hmm.
He used to have this thing where he'd start off and he'd have four cigarettes that he'd light and take a big puff and blow out all the smoke and say, "I love the smoke." People are always coming up to me, non-smokers, saying, you can't smoke like that. You're gonna die. It's, you know, it's horrible what you're doing to your body. And then he said, you know, Jim Fix, the expert on health, the jogger. Yeah, he has like 10 books. He's been on every talk show. You know how he died? jogging.
Yeah.
You know who found him? Two smokers. Hey, that looks like Jim Fix. I love Dennis Leary. He's a huge part of my life. I was at his wedding.
Yeah.
And so are you a better stand-up comedian or are you a better actor?
It's a good question. They're two different disciplines, so it's hard to say. I'm better at both now. I'm pleased that it's – I'm happy with what I'm producing, which I think is – for me anyway, is the key to me staying happy. If I'm happy with what I'm producing, because we talked about it before, there's this success that we all get, you know, when you go out, when we're younger, you're out in the world getting stuff. And now if the stuff you're doing has substance to it, it sustains me a little bit longer. So to make the switch from success just to get something, to have substance to being happy with what you're getting and what you're doing, is sustaining my happiness a little bit better. So when you say, are you a better actor or comedian? They're two different disciplines, so I don't think you can compare them. But what you can do is assess whether you're getting better at what you're doing.
One of the things I've always respected about you is I have always said about comedy, and I hope comedians don't take this the wrong way, but look, if you want to just do stand-up and you want to be the greatest stand-up in the world, there's nothing wrong with that, and that's wonderful.
Sure.
But my feeling is that chances are, using your past television show as an example, there's many cylinders in the engine of the car, and why drive with one when you have seven left to use?
Yeah.
But most comedians... I'd say 99% of all comedians, if you took away their stand-up comedy money, they'd be homeless.
Yeah.
Most actors, if you took away their acting money, they'd be homeless. But there's this rare 1% that at many times of their career and almost a full decade, you could take away the stand-up money. And they'd live off the acting money. You could take away the acting money, they'd live off the stand-up money. And that's Adam Ferrara.
Now, here's the issue. They're taking away all the money. That's what they're doing.
And so you are, honestly, I can count on half a hand the people who book significant acting jobs and do significant stand-up. I mean, you're a guy who did, you know... Letterman was the one of the greatest of all time. You did his show.
Yeah.
But then you do the newer shows like Corden. You did the Tonight Show with Leno.
Jimmy Fallon. We raced a green machine around the studio.
Yeah, you've done specials.
Yeah.
It's not like you're a guy who, oh well, you know, the Tonight Show liked him, but Letterman never booked them, or Letterman booked them, but the other shows didn't, or he didn't translate after time over to somebody like Jim Corden, James Corden, or Jimmy Fallon. It's like, oh, well, he can't. Oh, no, he did Rescue Me for this, and he does drama and comedy. Have you seen those monologues? Yeah, but is he really, can he do comedy stuff? Have you seen Paul Blart? You know, it's like, so... And he's channeling his mall job from when he was a young kid.
Yeah.
But the point is that who do we know in comedy that really has done that throughout their career? Jim Gaffigan has done that. A guy who you worked with on your show for a long time, Kevin James, has done that. But why do you think that's so rare? And what is it about you that solved the puzzle?
I don't know. I don't know about the rare part. I know why. What is the second question? You know why I do it is I have a mortgage. That's his wife is beautiful, Barry, but she eats every day, sometimes three times a day, and I know she's snacking. But yeah, it's I've been fortunate enough to have opportunities given to me that I've thrown myself into, and a lot of it is. I don't want to say fear, but a lot of it was you're driven by wanting to do well and doing your work. I spoke to Sharippa, Steve Sharippa. I love Steve.
Steve Sciarippa, comedian as well as an actor from The Sopranos.
From The Sopranos, and he's on Blue Bloods. And I was talking to him, and he prepares the same way I do. It's almost obsessive to do it, because we have that work ethic of life ain't fair and don't be late. That's pretty much it. And the work ethic is, and when anything in my control is not going to go wrong. And Steve has the same thing. He knows his lines. He knows where he's going to be. He shows up prepared. And a lot of that is because we want to do well in the opportunities that we're giving to us. So it's, and thank you for the compliment that I can do all these things. And it has been well received, but it's the reason – I don't have a real reason why I can do it. I just know that I've been able to do it, and I've cultivated those skills to do it. I mean, I took acting classes. My first acting gig was a sitcom. I flew out to L.A. to do The Tonight Show, and I auditioned for a sitcom, and I got it. And I bullshitted my way through the whole thing. You know, camera left. Oh, okay. I don't know what that means. Adam, come upstage. Right. I got no I got away with it, and I was funny, and I was bitten by the bug, and I was like, I need to study this because I want to do more of this. So I think if you apply yourself to it and the opportunities come there, I mean, you know the old saying, luck is when opportunity meets preparation. We have no control over the opportunity to a certain extent, but we have all control over the preparation. So
I feel like you said something earlier. Show up early,
mm-hmm.
Be prepared.
Yeah.
Whatever I can control, I'm going to make sure that there's nothing that's going to take me down.
Mm-hmm.
There's things I can't control that could take me down.
Yeah.
But my thing, I always felt like you, this is how much I feel about you.
Yeah.
I feel you're a better actor than a stand-up comedian, and I laugh at hardly anybody, and you're one of the select few I laugh at.
Oh, that's kind of you. Thank you.
I think you're an extraordinary stand-up comedian, but I think that you prepare more for acting based on the performances that I see. I can't imagine you could do that without preparing.
Yeah.
And in comedy, I feel like it comes as second nature to you.
Mm.
And I don't think you have to prepare as much. You can just go on stage and it channels
through. That's accurate. That's accurate.
And so that's why I think you're such a great actor. And I've always loved watching you as an actor.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
I believe you when I see you.
Well, that's the job. So I'm glad.
Yeah, but that's when it's some, but when it's somebody you know,
yeah,
and you've known for a long time, it's very hard to have somebody take you away from who they are and say, no, that's not Adam, that's somebody else.
Yeah, I think you're accurate in the part where you can prepare more for an acting role than stand up, because a lot of way I process, I actually write on stage. You know, I write. And you're in that moment. And I think the preparation for stand-up is be willing to be in that moment. That's the preparation. Be willing to be that vessel and to see where it takes you. So the preparation is the – it's not courage, artistic courage, but it's what we do. You know, this it's a calling. Stand-up is a calling. So I think that's the preparation, is to be open to what it will show you when you have the audience there.
And – correct. Hey, everybody. I hope you're enjoying this episode as much as I am. If you made it this far and you haven't fallen asleep yet, then you must be the type of person who's serious about having a career in the comedy business. That's why I'm offering you my Blueprint for Success, a one-of-a-kind all-access pass into my knowledge and experience after over 40 years of working with the best of the best in this crazy entertainment industry. I'll tell you all the stories, all the philosophies, give you all the great special guests, and even give you one-on-one private consultations to help you expand, enhance, and skyrocket your comedy career. Just go to barrykatz.com and click on Blueprint for Success to learn more about my groundbreaking digital academy that I've created just for you. With it, we can take your career so far that one day, instead of listening to this podcast,
you'll be interviewed on it.
We talked about risk.
Yeah.
Risk taking is one of the things that I think you can point to. I don't want to talk about influencers. I want to talk about stand-up comedians.
Right.
I think risk taking is the thing that, to me, after the pandemic, is the thing that people are responding to a lot now.
You think?
And when I say risk taking, I'm talking about the risk taking in material. I'm not talking about, I'm talking about things that are like different of how they were. People who talk to the crowd, we all know there's something been special about that since Rickles would do shows in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And honey, don't sit in the front row. We're not going to sit in the front row. Hackett, let's not sit. 1951, Hackett was making $175,000 a week in Vegas, telling jokes and shitting on the crowd and talking. He just didn't have a camera back and forth doing it. So that's always worked. We've always had MCs at comedy clubs like, oh, he's talking to the crowd again. But you don't remember, you know, hey, what do you do? You're an accountant. Oh, you're Jewish. What do you break into, you know, Schwartz and Schwartz and screw up their books? Okay, let's put that online. You remember the crack baby routine from Chappelle.
Yeah.
You know, you remember the gun control bit from Jim Jeffries. Those are the things that stay with you your whole life. You know, at least if you're a comedian, you remember Carlin's seven dirty words.
Sure.
You know, or you remember him talking about the Germans taking over and him saying about the United States, that's our f***ing job.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the, you know, people worrying about the environment. Oh, well, the world will flick people off like a dog flicks off fleas.
Yeah. A surface nuisance.
We don't remember, hey, what's your name? What do you do? That's not going to stand the test of time. Now, it doesn't matter if you don't care. Mm-hmm. And if you're an artist that doesn't care one way or the other, whether it stands, that's fine. You know, you can do whatever you want to do. But I think it's about the risk. It's about Sam Morril going on and doing a routine on the Nazis and how there's people who aren't Nazis in the concentration camps who were killed saying, hey, you know, I think there might have been a mistake here or whatever. You know, it's like, I think there's things like that that take people in a new direction that you might be like, that's a little, that's powerful. I don't know if I would have gone there, but I'm fascinated that you went there and you made it happen.
Yeah.
I remember you took a risk once. You've taken many risks. But I remember you took a risk once that shocked me.
Go ahead.
Doing Letterman back in the day was one of the greatest things you could ever do. The people there who ran the show were very, they wanted to know your set. They wanted to know what you were doing, how you were doing it. They went over it over and over again. And you went on to do the Letterman show, and you did something in the beginning of the show that they didn't know you were going to do. And I think that was a risk that didn't work, even though you still did well.
Oh, the malaria bit? Was that the malaria bit?
Where you, in the beginning, you did some joke where you fell to the floor.
Yeah, fell to the floor. It was a bit about malaria. I forget what it was, but it was killing in the clubs.
But that wasn't in your script.
I think, I'll be honest with you, Barry, I think it was Eddie Brill, I think, was the thing. I said, I wanted to do this bit. First of all, thank you for the risk.
The reason why I say that is I remember because I was there and the cameraman.
Oh, yeah, the cameraman didn't follow it. Yeah.
So
I don't think
they
told him, but I think I said, and it was a while ago, so I'll be honest with you. I don't know if I told Eddie I'll do if I feel it or something. I don't know. But you're right. The cameraman didn't pick it up. So
I thought that it wasn't cleared with them, so I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, it was. I remember showing it to Eddie. He goes, "That's funny. Are you going to do it?" And I said, "Yeah, if I feel it, I'll do it." But you were right. The cameraman didn't pick it up, but I think Eddie knew I was going to do it.
Eddie Brill was the booker of the Letterman show.
Eddie knew I was going to do it.
Supposed to see Eddie today.
He's a sweetheart, Eddie.
Yeah,
the best. But yeah, the risk of like those guys doing the risk. I want to go back to something you said about you think it's more palatable now in the audience. I think the audience is more twitchy now. You bring up anything now and they're like, they're twitchy. They don't want to not be challenged. But I think because of the climate we're in, you know, you say something that they're looking around.
I think I agree. I was at the Comedy Cellar the other night and I saw Sherrod Small do a routine that was, the premise was just unbelievably shocking and powerful.
Yeah.
And uncomfortable.
Mm.
But he sold it and somehow he got through it. And it was like a 10-minute bit about how Ted Bundy is the Michael Jordan
of serial killers.
Yeah,
yeah.
And just every time another person got killed, he'd be like, Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, every time, you know. Yeah. It's like, you
but,
know.
But the audience is, you know, they're not as receptive. I think because of the climate we're in, they're twitchy. They don't, you know, you bring up anything that's, you know, controversial or something that carries a kind of divisive energy. It's like, oh, just talk about your dick, please.
But online, you don't see how people are twitchy. You just see what happens. And sometimes they pass around things that are more risky than things that are less risky.
Yeah. But again, it's in that if you read the comments, which I try never to do, you'll see that there can be divisive stuff. How dare you? All that kind of crap. God.
One.
Dos.
Two.
Three.
Cinco.
Cuatro.
Five.
Cinco.
Six.
6 degrees of separation.
6 degrees of separation. I'm going to mention some people.
Go ahead.
Tell me something that comes to your mind. Anything. It could be a word, a sentence, tiny story or some kind.
Go ahead.
Dennis Leary.
Smoking. Needs to stop.
Still smoking?
Still smoking. He's. I'll deny he said it, but I love that skinny Irish. I mean, just very. He was very sweet, very supportive, and always happy to see him. And learned a great deal of how to be on a set and what is required of you on a set just by watching. He's a good leader, you know, and just by keeping your mouth shut and watching that, and to be there when the bell rings. And it was like, it was trial by fire. I mean, I've done a bunch of TV shows with Dennis and stuff, but it was always trial by fire. You're going to get two takes and the second one better be better than the first one. You know, you're going to hit it and have your prop. That's the preparation. You know, what made a good leader from him was I wanted to do well for him the first time. And I wanted him to know that I can throw him the ball. He'll be there. He'll be where he's supposed to be. And I think that's what makes a good leader, is when you want to be on the same page with him and you're driving towards the same goal. And he gave me opportunities that I don't know I would have gotten from anybody else.
And there were people on that show who shall remain nameless who were not as prepared as you, but had this natural way about them, and they just were a part of the family.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd come on set and you'd realize that they weren't as prepared as you. But somehow, some way, like you said, life isn't fair.
No.
And they still delivered.
Yeah.
And the world never knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. The nice thing about being on a set, and one of the things I love about working in television, is it's a family every day, and you're evolving. The show is evolving. Your character's evolving. And you're seeing everybody every day. It's series television when it's working right. And I've been fortunate to be in 3 or 4 happy houses that ran for a while. There's nothing like it.
George Carlin.
A sweet man. I got to meet Carlin. First of all, I had the albums under the bed when I was a kid. And then, you know, his voice is in my head. I got to open for him at the Comedy Magic Club. I got a call from my manager, Peter.
Peter Rosegarden, a really great manager. Tremendous.
We've been together, God, over 20-something years. He's my guy. He goes, Mike Lacey's got to bump your weekend, but he said, if you want, you can open. Right away, the ego kicks in. Open? What sword swallower am I opening for? I'm not opening for some. Who am I opening for? George Carlin. Does he need a ride? Can I pick him up at the hotel? So you can't go in the dressing room before because he's rehearsing, but you're more than welcome to come back after the stage. So you know the Comedy Magic Club. It's like a little theater. So there's little curtains and everything. The MC went up. I went up. I did a half hour. I walk off stage. There's these two little eyes and a silver beard. Colin's sitting there and he puts his hand out. He goes, "You're funny." I go, "And you're Colin." And we had a mutual friend, Chris Rush, who has since passed away.
Yes, right? Tremendous.
So I was talking about Rush and we're just bullshitting back and forth. He's quoting a joke. He was like, "Oh, that Dick Clark joke, that was funny." I go, "Really?" He goes, "Oh, yeah, that was right. When did you write that?" We're bullshit. And all of a sudden, you hear the audience clapping. He goes, "Is that for me?" I go, "They don't want to see me again, George. You better get out there." He went out, did his whole set, went to the green room, taking pictures with my wife, just bullshitting back and forth as a comic. And he was so gracious, and he was aware of his position in our business. And that when they say, "Don't meet your heroes," I'm so glad I met him. Him and Pryor. I got to meet both of them. And it was just a great experience for me.
Your father.
My father. Is something to live up to. Still. I mean, he's passed away and he's still a huge part of my life. As he got older, I got to see more of his humanness, his humanity. Because he was always... And I think this is where I get a lot of my anxiety from. He was on his own, my dad. You know, he had my grandparents and stuff. But he told my grandfather, I'm going to marry Louise. And my grandfather said, "Oh, let us know when. We'll come." So he was always on his own. So he was always giving us everything he could. But he had a deep sense of loneliness. He said, he goes, "You got to do things." He goes, "I look back behind me. There's nobody back there. I got to make this work." And he never did, and I didn't know this till he met my wife. He loved my wife. That's one thing I'm grateful for. He got to meet my wife. He was ill, but the last 3 years of his life, he got to spend time with her. And when I took him to chemo for the first time, they're hooking him up. I brought the laptop. We're watching movies together. I said, "I'm going to sit with him," because I was there for the whole ride. And I leaned over, and I went, "Pop, I'm going to marry Alex." And he said, "If you don't, I will." "And don't listen to your mother. She's plenty good enough for you." So my dad he's someone to live up to. But he told my wife, I know why he gave me that speech. Do it now before your life gets complicated. Because he wanted to be an inventor. He was always good. You could always fix everything. But, you know, back then, Barry, you were married. He was in the Army at 18. You married at 20. You got a kid at 21. And there's your life.
Your proudest moment in show business.
My proudest moment in show business was a show business moment, but it was a moment I shared with my dad. We're doing a Rescue Me comedy tour, we're playing Radio City. Right? I said, "Pop, I'm playing Radio City." He goes, "Yeah, kid, that's great. Your mother says you're also playing the Mohegan Sun Casino. We're going to go to that one." And okay. So it's 7,000 people in the arena. So he's there. We're all there. I talked to my father. I said, "You're going to be at the show?" He goes, "Oh, we're going to be there, you know, unless I get on a rush. But we should be there, right?" So he got in there. He's sitting third row center, big shock of gray, a white hair. And he's like, "You going to do the bit in the desert?" You know, that bit.
I love the.
And I haven't done that bit in years, but that was my pop's favorite bit. I said, "Yeah, Pop, I'll do it."
It's one of my favorite bits.
Yeah. So I remembered it. I did it. And I got a big applause break. And I said into the microphone, I said, "I did it, Pop." And I'm talking to my father with 7,000 people. I go, "My father asked me to do that bit." And it's my father. So I did it for him. And they all and clapping and everything. And this was years ago. So cut to, he's dying. And not going to be long. I put him in a chair. And I slept in a room with him. I bought him one of those chairs so he can get up and down. And I put him to bed. And he sat down in the bed. And I gave him his medicine. And he looked at me. He goes, it's not going to be long now, kid. And he went, "You know what a good night was?" He goes, "You remember when I came to see you at Mohegan Sun and you did that bit for me?" He goes, "Yeah." And then you looked at me in the audience. He goes, "Everyone in that audience was looking at me, and I was looking at you. That was a good night for me."
Wow. Wow, man. How do I continue after that? That's incredible.
Yeah. This is a calling. I was told, before we turned this on, I told you I spoke to Robert Klein, for about 2 hours. And, you know, he said it was a calling that we have. And this is what we're doing. Look, we're all screaming, yelling, money. We all got to eat, all the things. But when you get to the bottom of what we're doing. We were given this set of tools and given this impulse to do this, I think, for that. And I don't think we realize that until we get to a point where you got to burn out of realizing there's no healing in achievement. There's healing in service. And that's what this job's about for me.
Absolutely. Two more questions. Your biggest disappointment in show business and how you used it to fuel yourself to the next level.
My biggest disappointment in show business was, I guess a pilot that didn't go, and I've done a lot of them. That was my biggest disappointment when I did a pilot for, I did one for ABC that didn't go, but it shouldn't have, to be honest with you. I looked and I went, I didn't know enough. But I did one, it was at Warner Brothers, and I had a bunch of good people in it, and it didn't go. And I used it to, I didn't use it to fuel myself, but I used it, it was shown to me how, I learned a lesson from it that I still take to this day. Alex Rocco played my father. He was Mo Green in The Godfather. So Rocco plays my father. And he wanted to meet me before he took this gig. So I met him at the Sportsman's Lodge. And he walks in and he goes, draw chips so everyone in the house can gamble. He did the line from the guy. I said, wow, Mr. Rocco, how did you know I wanted to hit? He goes, everybody wants to hear that. Sit down. And he told me the story. And he wanted to meet me. He takes the gig. He goes, you're funny. He takes the gig. And we shoot the pilot. It doesn't get picked up. And I'm depressed. I'm in my underwear for 3 days. I'm eating cheese doodles. I crawl inside a bottle of Maker's Mark. You think it's the end of the world because you'll never get an opportunity. This is it. I f***ed it all up. So for 3 days, I was just locked in my room. Phone rings. It's Rocco. Hello? Kid? It's Rocco. I put my retirement in your hands and you f***ed it up. And then, so I'm laughing. I go, I'm sorry, pal. He goes, do not let them control your happiness. I'm going to tee off. He was calling me from the golf course. Do not let them control your happiness. So I don't know if I use it to fuel myself. I use it to comfort myself.
Fantastic. Last question. What advice would you give for the young comedian somewhere on Long Island trying to look at that comedy club as they're driving by to a mall gig on the bus? To figuring out a way to how to get through everything and be a chameleon and have the kind of amazing, extraordinary career that you've had.
Write what you know. Just write what you know. Do what you do. Because if you're running around trying to figure everything out to a certain extent, you're not going to be you anymore. So then what are you selling? Write what you know and then realize there's a difference between your art and commerce. Don't write for the end. Write for what you know and then figure out how to sell it. You know, have the baby, but then take care of the baby. But they're two different things. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Tremendous. Tremendous, tremendous. Adam Ferrara.
It's good to see you, baby.
I'm always, always an honor. Thank you so much.
It's been a long time. Thank you for having me.
As always, this has been Industry Standard with me, Barry Katz. And if you like the show, tell all your friends. And if you don't like the show, tell all your friends.
You get all the money, drop that fancy car. All the people love you, cause you're going far. Life is for the dreamers, they have all to gain. It's never quite over till it all feels the same. You pick your own poison, dig your own grave down in the valley. Fortune.
Thank you for listening to Industry Standard with Barry Katz. If you'd like more info on our schedule of new episodes or how to reach Barry through Twitter, Facebook, or email, go to BarryKatz.com. Before you leave, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast, leave a comment, and rate it, even if you think it blows. Thank you for your support, and have a great day.
Hey, everybody. Let me remind you one more time about my new blueprint for success. It's a project I've spent months and months working on just to help you jumpstart your comedy career and beat the competition. Whether you want to do stand-up, sketch, improv, acting, writing, producing, directing, radio, social media influencing, or even if you want a career behind the scenes as a manager or agent, Blueprint for Success will give you all the tools you need to take your career to the highest levels. With exclusive interviews, my top 50 commercial-free episodes from Industry Standard, one-on-one coaching with me, and unprecedented access into my knowledge and experience from over 40 years in this crazy business. I guarantee you that with Blueprint for Success, you'll become the creator you've always dreamed of becoming. No one's asking me to do this. I want to do it because I want to help you become truly undeniable. So just go to BarryKatz.com, click on Blueprint for Success, and start your incredible journey today. I truly can't wait to work with you to help you change the trajectory of your comedy career forever.